Today's reading is from Hebrews 10, verses 26 through 39. For if we go on sinning willfully after receiving the knowledge of the truth, there no longer remains a sacrifice for sins, but a terrifying expectation of judgment and the fury of a fire which will consume the adversaries. Anyone who has set aside the law of Moses dies without mercy on the testimony of two or three witnesses. How much severer punishment do you think he will deserve who has trampled underfoot the Son of God and has regarded as unclean the blood of the covenant which he was by which he was sanctified and has insulted the Spirit of grace? For we know him who said, "Vengeance is mine, I will repay." And again, "The Lord will judge his people." It is a terrifying thing to fall into the hands of the living God. But remember the former days, when after being enlightened, you endured a great conflict of sufferings, partly by being made a public spectacle through reproaches and tribulations, and partly by becoming sharers with those who were so treated. For you showed sympathy to the prisoners and accepted joyfully the seizure of your property, knowing that you have for yourselves a better possession and a lasting one. Therefore, do not throw away your confidence, which has a great reward. For you have need of endurance, so that when you will have done the will of God, you may receive what was promised. For yet in a very little while, he who is coming will come, and will not delay. But my righteous one shall live by faith, and if he shrinks back, my soul has no pleasure in him. But we are not of those who shrink back to destruction, but of those who have faith to the persevering of the soul, preserving of the soul. You may be seated.
Well, good morning again. Good to see everybody here this morning. The title of our lesson is Courage to Endure, Something Better is Coming. I heard somebody say one time that it's just not necessary to put a title on your lesson. Well, if I'm in the audience and there's no title, and I kind of don't know where we're going, and I kind of like to know where I'm going. I don't know about you. I've only been one time in my life where I didn't know where I was going as far as taking a trip, and it was a disaster. Well, if I'm going anywhere, I'm going to plan it out. So hopefully this helps you plan this out as we go through it. One of the most critical attributes that a Christian can have is courage. And frankly, it takes courage to be a Christian. It simply takes courage to be a Christian. Now, Christian courage isn't based on wanting a fight, but knowing that a spiritual fight is inevitable. Paul told Timothy, fight the good fight of faith. The fight is inevitable. It's going to happen. You may just be fighting with yourself. I don't know. But it's going to happen. You may fight your own faith sometimes, but it's going to happen. It isn't based on wanting revenge or the fight, because the fight is a spiritual warfare. Now, it could become physical, and it does become physical. But God says, "Vengeance is mine, saith the Lord." But it's based on something, that something better is coming. That's what the fight is based on. That's what courage is based on. So that belief, our confession, calls us to patiently endure persecution and trial, to act in accordance with our faith, to defend our faith, and to help a brother in need. Christian courage is confidence. Christian courage is confidence in the advocacy and the confidence in our intercessor of Jesus Christ. So without Christ, we would be lost for eternity. It's an interesting thing that the way it's stated in Hebrews chapter 10, verse 31. It's really interesting. To me, it is anyway, the way that this is stated. It says, it is a fearful thing to fall into the hands of the living God. Well, I thought about that for a little bit, so we need to clearly understand what that verse is saying so that we fully realize what God, what it means, because God already holds everything in his hands. He always has. The earth, the sky, the stars, the planets, the universe, the complete universe, mankind, life and breath. God has always held those things in his hands. So to fall into the hands of the living God must convey something deeper. And so we need to try to figure out what that is. So the Hebrew writer stating something that's important for us, because between us and justice stands one person. Now a spiritual person, but Jesus is our mediator. So if we reject him, as many people do, many people reject him, then we have no intercessor. We have no spiritual lawyer for us, no spiritual attorney that mediates between us and God. And without him, then we are really just kind of on our own. We take our chances with an avenging God who is a just God. But those that know Christ also know that he has prepared something better for us. So we store treasures for ourselves in heaven through faithful courage. Before Jesus ascended into heaven, this was after his crucifixion. He has his apostles before him, and he's talking to them and telling them what they must do. He says to them, just this one statement I want to read. He says, "Go therefore, make disciples of all nations." Now, intermixed in what he's saying to them, I believe he's talking to them, you make those disciples courageous. You instill courage into those disciples. You mold them. You prepare them, because there's a spiritual warfare that they're going to endure. I don't know about you, but I battle a spiritual warfare every day. Apostle Paul battled a spiritual warfare between the flesh and the spirit every day. And I do that same thing. And you know what? Sometimes I win and sometimes I lose. When I win, God did it for me. When I lose, I was doing it. I was the one that was battling. If I let God battle for me, then I'm going to win. Jesus said, "Blessed are you," this is Matthew chapter 5, starting with verse 11, said, "Blessed are you when they revile and persecute you and say all kinds of evil against you falsely for my sake. Blessed." Blessed, happy. This is a translation that blessed means happy. You're happy when people revile and persecute you, aren't you? Are you happy when people persecute you and they mock you and they make fun of you? Well, he says, blessed. You're blessed if they do that and say all kinds of evil against you falsely for my sake. I'd like to say that my response has always been happy. But a lot of times my response is, I can't wait. I'm going to get them for that. I'm going to get them somehow, some way. I'm going to get them for this. And that's a lot of times that's my response. And I'm losing the spiritual warfare when I do that. I'm losing the battle. He says, "Rejoice and be exceedingly glad, for great is your reward in heaven. For so they persecuted the prophets who were before you." And if you go back and you look and read about the prophets, they stood there and they took it. They stood and they took it. They had courage. It takes courage to endure. The Bible says to us, stay the course. No matter what happens, something better is coming. Stay the course. Now, it's interesting, too, the Hebrew writer, which I personally believe is Apostle Paul, the Hebrew writer states that persecution came after they were illuminated. And sometimes that's translated enlightened. The gospel message was preached, so people became Christians. And guess what? The fight's on. Now the fight started. There was no fight before then, but the fight's on now. And these people that he's talking to, they were persecuted by the Jews and Gentiles. The Jews and Gentiles persecuted them for their faith. Hebrews, and I know we've had this read, but that's kind of where the lesson's going, so I got to read it again. But recall Hebrews 10:32, but recall the former days in which after you were illuminated, you were enlightened, you endured a great struggle with sufferings, partly why you were made a spectacle both by reproaches and tribulations, and partly why you became companions of those who were so treated. Now, not all, I think, experienced the same degree of persecution. Some people were, but everyone was made a spectacle in one way or another, and spectacle for their belief. They were mocked, some were imprisoned, some were tortured. And throughout history, those that follow Christ, many people are executed. Even in our own day and age, it's just hard to believe, but people in other countries are executed because of their Christian faith. We have brethren that serve God in other, that I've been in contact with, sometimes have to hide to be able to profess their faith. Sometimes they get together with other brethren in secrecy, because if it gets found out, their own government will persecute them. That's just amazing to us here in the United States that that would be the case. But they have real fear for their life. But the fear for their life doesn't compare with their love for God. Reproach means that in some way they've tried to shame Christians for their belief. And often it's because they have a close association with someone, like the Apostle Paul. He says, Hebrews 10:34, he says, "For you had compassion on me in my chains." And I think that's one of the things. Now, don't get me wrong. There's a lot of the, this could fit a lot of the apostles that were thrown into prison and put in chains, but Paul himself talks about it, writes about it a lot of times, about being in prison. "You had compassion on me in my chains." So I believe that helps validate that the Apostle Paul is a writer, in my opinion. But they suffered persecution because they willingly helped him while he was in prison. And they knew beforehand that it would cost them. They knew beforehand that it would cost them for helping Paul. Hebrews 10:34b, it says, "And joyfully accepted the plundering of your goods, knowing that you have a better and an enduring possession for yourselves in heaven." Whatever possessions they gained, they lost. Whatever possessions that they had were taken away from them. Now, how much faith, how much courage would it take? And I can't answer for you, and you can't answer for me, but how much faith, how much Christian faith and courage would it take if they were going to come because you believe in Christ and they were going to seize your home? Maybe they were going to come because you have Christian faith. They're going to stop you from attending church. They're going to seize your car. And I know some people that their car is their home. What if they were going to take away your job because of your Christian faith? And I know some people that's had their jobs basically taken away because of their Christian faith. I know somebody really intimately that way. What if somebody was going to take your family members, which they do, because of your Christian faith in parts of the world? How much courage would it take? Well, what if we lack courage? What if we have no courage? That doesn't mean we don't know, but what if we lack courage? What shall it profit a man if he gains the whole world and loses his own soul? The opposite of courageous is cowardice. And a coward occupies an eternity with the worst of all alien sinners. I'm going to read to you from Revelation chapter 21, verse 8. But the cowardly, unbelieving, abominable, murderers, sexually immoral, sorcerers, idolaters, and all liars have their part in the lake which burns with fire and brimstone, which is the second death. If somebody asks you, what does it mean, fire and brimstone? Can you explain that to me? What would you say? What is that place? Where is that? That second death. You can answer. Anybody? Where is it? Yeah. It's an eternity separated from God. And so I want you to notice something about that. That the coward and unbelieving, they're not the same thing. A coward and the unbeliever, they're not the same thing. They're two distinct categories. The coward is sometimes translated as fearful. They are actual believers who don't have the backbone to stand up for Christ. When their faith is challenged, they cower in timidity. And you know, in our own modern world, probably the best way I can illustrate that is the coward, when has opportunity to stand up for Christ, does not speak out. That's the coward. And sometimes they will actually, by their actions, deny Jesus. And he says there, their condemnation is equal to that of unbelievers, murderers, liars, sexually immoral, sorcerers, and so forth. The coward is not Christian and is a disgrace in the sight of God. So if we are to be Christian, that's Christ-like, we are to be courageous, just like Jesus. But the coward lives his life in a way to avoid such situations where his faith is going to be tested. The coward runs from spiritual confrontation to save his own skin, so to speak. Now, I don't say to you, now go out and pick a fight with people, because I think sometimes that's what happens. But don't run from it when it happens. Stand up for Christ. Now, how do I know all this stuff? Because I could see myself at one time in my life, on both sides of this fence. Both sides. I don't want to end my life that way, though. I no longer want to be a coward. I want to be one that stands up for Christ. Cowardice is also sometimes linked with someone that has a guilty conscience. One of my favorite proverbs, if not my favorite proverb, is Proverbs chapter 28, verse 1. The wicked flee when no one pursues, but the righteous are as bold as a lion. The wicked flee is because they've got a guilty conscience and they're always looking back over their shoulder. Always. But the righteous are as bold as a lion. The righteous have the courage to confess their sins, to get right with God. And the wicked or the coward runs from confession. I read this story about a young boy. I think it was Pakistan, but I don't remember now exactly where he was from. But a young boy who was in school, it's funny that as I was reading this, you know, American kids are just like, if it's Pakistan, Pakistani kids. Because listen to this. Here is a young boy who was in school in another land, because I couldn't remember where I read that, where he was from, sitting in a class feeling bored, tired, and anxious for the school day to end. He was sitting there trying to focus on what the teacher was saying. I've had some students like that, haven't I, Brianna? Not you, because you were awesome. One of my favorite students of all times is that girl back there. I love her. But anyway, so he's trying to focus in on what the teacher's saying, kind of like you're doing now with me. And suddenly the ground shook beneath him and things began to fall from the ceiling and began to fall from the walls and books fell off the shelf. And he realized that they were in the middle of an earthquake. And he was thinking to himself later on that I really wasn't taught to be courageous. I was the youngest of the family. I was the baby of the family. So I have been babied my whole life. And I wasn't taught to be courageous. But here's a very intelligent young man. He thought to himself, I've got to develop courage and I've got to develop it really fast. Well, it just so happened that his grandfather was the principal of the school. And so he was watching him and he was calm and he was collected and he was trying to hasten all the kids out of the school without getting them to, you know, to panic. One time we had our kindergarten kids are in the same building as ours. And I remember this because I was so upset. Well, it looked like we were going to have a tornado. And this was right after school. And one of the teachers, I won't mention who it was, but the kindergartners were walking through the hall trying to go to the buses. And obviously we couldn't let them leave. And so she gathered them up. And the more she talked to them, the more scared they got. And particularly one of them was crying. So I went over to her and I said, hey, everything's going to be fine. Don't worry. I'm right here with you. This is going to pass. You're going to get on your bus. You're going to go home. But those kids were so scared to death. This is not the circumstance we have with this principal. He was calm. He was collected. He was hastening, yes, getting the kids out, but he was protecting them, reassuring them the whole time, and he got them out. And this young boy, who was the grandson of the principal, he seen what the grandfather was doing, and he said, I can do that too. So he tried to encourage his classmates to leave the school building. And they did. And they no more and got outside and turned around and looked, and the whole building collapsed. And this is what he said. This is what he wrote. I realized at that moment, I didn't cry, nor did I panic, but I had developed courage. I learned courage from the actions quickly and demeanor of my grandfather, who acted swiftly to save us all. Now, it's kind of another anomaly to this story. They moved to the United States. And when they got into the United States, they got into a region that is known for hurricanes. And this little boy was recounting, I got a little bit older, we're here in the United States, and we survived one of the worst hurricanes in U.S. history because I acted calmly and swiftly. I learned courage. Courage then can be learned from a source that we trust. We trust our source because his promise is that there's something better to come. There is something better to come. Have courage to trust God with all your might, with all that you have, all the time. At 120 years of age, because he was being held accountable by God, Moses wasn't able to lead the children of Israel into the promised land. he was not going to get to go. He'd led them for 40 years wandering in the wilderness. But because he took credit for something that he should not have, he was not able to go into the promised land with him. But he still was leading. And this is what he said to them as they go into that land to conquer all these nations. He wanted them to have comfort. He wanted them to have courage. He says, Deuteronomy chapter 31, "Be strong and have good courage. Do not fear nor be afraid of them. For the Lord your God, he is the one who goes with you. He will not leave you nor forsake you." And you know what? The challenge for us today is to understand that that God, the God of the Old Covenant, the God that was with Moses, the God that was in the burning bush that spoke to Moses, is the same God that we serve today. The very same God, and he gives us courage through his Son. You know, you can just read some passages of Scripture, and you can just read them, and you just move on, but I want to read something that you probably didn't think much about, maybe. But John chapter 13, verse 1. Now listen to this. "Now before the feast of the Passover, when Jesus knew that his hour had come, that he should depart from this world to the Father, having loved his own who were in the world, he loved them to the end." Now, people say, well, Jesus was humble. He was not a man of action. He didn't need courage because he was God in the flesh. He had courage, tremendous courage. He gave his life so that we would have something better to come. He loves us in this very same way. And I want to express this to you, that even when times are difficult, and times are difficult sometimes in our lives, sometimes we look at it and we think, this is a dark, dark world. This is a dark, dark time in my own life. But we can take courage if we trust him. The psalmist writes, 139, chapter 139, "Even there your hand shall lead me, and your right hand shall hold me. If I say, surely the darkness shall fall on me, even the night shall be light about me. Indeed, the darkness shall not hide from you, but the night shines as the day. The darkness and the light are both alike to you." God holds your hand. He says, don't fear. Take courage. If we stand by God, he stands with us. The Lord is your keeper. Psalm 121, "The Lord is your keeper. The Lord is your shade on your right hand." And I'm going to not read what I do have here, but I want you to see that in the last part of what Brother Ryan read for us, verse 36, he says, "For you have need of endurance." And this is going to be just for a little while. Just for a little while. But you hang in there. Don't shrink back. Don't go back to destruction. Don't give up. Keep on keeping on. And this Hebrew writer, which I believe is the Apostle Paul, is echoing what he'd already written to the Corinthian brethren in 2 Corinthians chapter 4. You can read that too, 13 through 18. I won't believe it. Read it all. I'm not going to read it all, but you can read that. But at the 17th verse, he says, "For momentary, light affliction is producing for us an eternal weight of glory far beyond comparison." Far beyond all comparison, a little while, momentary, light affliction. If we today suffer suffer persecution for the cause of Christ, we could do that the entirety of our Christian life. And I won't live this long, but if my life was going to be, and I wouldn't want it to be, 969 years like Methuselah, that is nothing in comparison to eternity. Nothing in comparison. Don't shrink back. Don't throw it away. Be courageous. Be a Christian. Be a Christian. Have faith. and be courageous. So we're going to offer Christ's invitation. And it takes courage to, respond to the gospel call. It takes courage. Because humbling ourselves, humbling and being submissive, is really foreign to human pride. It requires us to relinquish our own will for His. But today, if you hear the gospel call and you have not responded, respond in faithful submission. Have spiritual courage and become a child of God. Now, if we are a child of God, but we're anxious for whatever reason, we're fearful, I want you to remember what Peter wrote. Peter wrote 1 Peter chapter 6, verse 7. He says, 6 and 7, I'm sorry. Therefore, not chapter 6. I don't have the chapter there. I think it's chapter 5. I apologize to myself because you can't see it. Chapter 5, verses 6 and 7. Therefore, humble yourselves under the mighty hand of God, that He may exalt you at the proper time, casting your anxiety on Him, because He cares for you. He loves you to the end. So however we can help you today, please let us know while we stand and while we sing.